Anyway, we're on Daf Tes Amud Aleph here in Shnayim Osim Vitalis, and we're up to, let's see where we got up to. Are we up to Omer Rav Ashi? Just give me a second. I usually make a note of it, but this time I didn't make a note of it. Tashma. Let's start with Tashma, because I think that's where we got up to. So let me tell everybody where we're up to on Daf Tes Amud Aleph. You'll count up from the bottom of the page. No. If you count up from the bottom of the page, it's about 10 lines up. Let's count it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Great. Tashma. Now, this is the first time that we're quoting a brisa as a kasha, as an objection against Shmuel. You remember that Shmuel's position was that Rachuv is not a kinyan, unless he was manig baraglov. And now we're going to prove from this brisa that Rachuv is not a kinyan, is a kinyan, sorry, against Shmuel, and Rachuv is a valid kinyan. Toshma, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. So we're talking now about a lost object, and we're talking about the possibility of making a kinyan, and this object is located in one of two places. It's either in a sade, out in the fields, or it's in the city. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rachuv besade. Rachuv is a valid kinyan out in the fields. That's where people ride horses, let's say, for example. So if he sees a horse that's hefker and he wants to make a kinyan on it and it's out in the field, he can do so with rechiva, with rachuv. Again, we're going to assume that at this point he's not manig baraglov, because otherwise manig baraglov really is not called rachuv, it's called manig, if you remember from yesterday. Mm-hmm. Now, what about if he finds the horse in the city? So manig be'ir kana, if he leads the animal or causes the animal to move, then in the city he makes a kinyan. Now, this brisa is going to introduce a concept which we touched on but never really got into, and that's called kidarka and shalo kidarka. Normally those categories apply to isurim, especially, for example, achila, or on Shabbos to malacha, and you have something called kidarka, the way most people would do it, and shalo kidarka, an unusual way. And very often, if a person implements a maisa avera in an unusual way, that's a mitigating circumstance. That's called shalo kidarka. We have a similar kind of concept with regard to kinyanin. A kinyan has to be kidarka. And that's going to be this brisa. I'm just giving an introduction to this brisa. The brisa is going to say that the action that you do in order to qualify as a kinyan has to be kidarka. That's the way people usually behave. If it's unusual, then it doesn't qualify as a kinyan. So for example, a person could ride a horse out in the fields, but he would not ride a horse in the city. And the simple reason for that is because people are crowded in the city, it's an urban area, and they will interfere with his ability to ride. Or alternatively, it may be dangerous if he rides in the city and he may run down somebody. Therefore, if you want to make a kinyan and acquire ownership on a horse that's hefker, and if you're in the city, then it has to be manhig. Manig means that's the way you would lead the animal in the city. You know, you would stand on your 2 feet and lead the animal, and hopefully no one will interfere. I mean, you could have people interfering with you even if you're manig, but it's a lot less of an interference than it would be if he was a rachuv. So Rabbi Eliezer applies these categories of kidarko and shalo kidarko to hilchas kinyanin. And just like shalo kidarko undermines a maisa vera in many, many different areas of halacha, so too shalo kidarko undermines the validity of a kinyan. because a kinyan has to demonstrate bailus ownership, and you have to demonstrate it in a way that's a normal behavior pattern. If you're unusual and you do something that is not sensible, so to speak, that cannot qualify as a kinyan. But just give me one more minute so I don't lose my trend. But in the case of Rachuv, what Rabbi Eliezer is saying is that fundamentally Rachuv is a valid kinyan. And I'll prove it to you. It's not a valid kinyan in the city because who would ride a horse through the city? That's a very dangerous operation, and it's both detrimental to the Rachuv as well as dangerous to the people walking in the streets. But that doesn't mean that Rachuv is not a kinyan. I'll prove to you that Rachuv is a valid kinyan. That when a person rides an animal, that does prove that he is acquiring ownership over the animal. And where do I prove that from? From the field. Because in the Sadr, Rabbi Eliezer validates the kinyan Rachuv. David?
Yeah, Manhig. Are we assuming a long Manhig is a valid kinyan, period?
Manhig is a valid kinyan as far as I know. On the Mashiach, correct.
Right. Now, so, if when he says Rachel Basuda, that means a few Rachel Basuda. We're not excluding Manik Basuda.
Of course.
Right. You know, it's Manik Be'ir means that even in the city you could be Kona with Manik, but certainly you could be Kona in the Sodom. Now, I just want to point out one thing from yesterday.
Because it's Mashiach.
Oh, even though Manik is Mashiach, there is one case that I know of where Manik would not be a valid Kenyan, even though it's Mashiach. And that's the case of a Gamal. Did I get that right? Just one second. Of the Chamor.
Oh, where he calls it, yeah. Maybe it's not a Maisa because he's
right.
He's just behind it, pushing it.
Wait. I just want to get this again. Chamor is usually Manhig, and Gamal, we said, was what? Was Mashiach. Oh, but Gamal is Mashiach. Oh, yeah. So Manig in a Gamal, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not a valid Kinyan. Even though Manig is Mashiach, and he causes the Gamal to move, that's not how you get a Gamal to move.
It's not Kedarka.
And it's not Kedarka. So I just want to point out that what we're seeing here in Rabbi Eliezer is to some extent a repeat of what we saw in Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, who says that Manig B'Gamal is not a Kinyan. Why? Because it's not Kidarka. The way that you get a Gamal to move is not by taking a stick and hitting it on the back, but rather by pulling the Gamal. Again, I don't know. You can Google it online and see if you could actually pull a Gamal. I don't know.
And calling a Chamor by voice?
That's also Kona in a Chamor. Because a Chamor is what we call Manig. Manig means that you get the animal to move. How? There are many different options. I mentioned to you yesterday that what I saw with my eyes, and maybe you've seen this, is that they hit it in the back. You know, that's how they get the chamor to move.
But I guess the problem when you call the chamor, so are you doing mice, or are you doing deeper?
Right, but the Gemara says that in Kinyon, and that's going to be a sugya in the second parak of Bav Metzia, that calling an animal is also a way of being kona an animal.
Okay, so then we're not going to question that if he calls a chamor in...
Since Manig is efficient, is valid in a chamor, then calling it should also be valid. Now the Gemara says, Hachanami b'manig b'ragla. So the Gemara wants to use the same old answer that we've used over and over again to upgrade a Rachuv situation in such a way that even Shmuel would agree that it's valid as a Kenyan. And that's called Manig b'ragla. But then we have the following question. Rabbi Eliezer differentiates between Manig Be'ir and Rachuv B'Sadeh. If we're identifying Rachuv as Manig Beraglov, then basically he's not Kona by Rechiva, he's being Kona by Manig, meaning he's actually pressuring the animal and causing the animal to move. What difference to make whether he kicks the animal with a stick or he kicks the animal with his feet? In both cases, he is causing the animal to move. This is a classic manhig, or mashiach, if you will. Why does Rabbi Eliezer call it rachuv? And the Gemara says, ihachi hainu manhig, why are you calling it rachuv? It's manhig. And manhig, Rabbi Eliezer says, works, it operates only in the city. The Gemara answers, as we can anticipate ourselves, trei gavni manhig. There are two ways of being manhig. there's being managed by, let's say, calling the animal or hitting the animal or pulling the animal, and then there's a manig by riding the animal and using your legs wrapped around the animal to get the animal to move. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, are you telling me that Rachuv, in Rabbi Eliezer's frame of reference, is manig? If that be the case, Ihachi Rachuv be'ir my time alone kani. Rabbi Eliezer is committed to the fact that manig is operative as a valid kinyan in the city. Now you're telling me that Rachuv is manig. Why isn't Rachuv a valid kinyan in the city? Amar Rav Kahana, l'fisha ein darkon shel b'nei yodim lirkov be'ir. And again, here we're introducing the concept of kedarka and shelo kedarka. And he's saying that we don't ride a horse in the city. That's not normal practice.
But it's not a reflection on the type of kinyan. It's just a situation that doesn't fit.
Well, yes and no. I think it's a reflection on the kinyan to the extent that a kinyan has to be a demonstration. If I want to show that it's mine, I behave towards the object in a certain way. If I behave towards the object in a very unusual way, then it's lacking the objectivity of a kinyan. If you would ask me, what are the two most critical elements that go into every kinyan, I would say the following. Number one is hafganas bailus, to show and demonstrate that it's yours. And number two is objectivity. Objectivity means it's no longer that you're in the mood, so to speak. You could be in the mood to do anything. That's not a kinyan. I'll give you an example of what I have in mind, but let's not get off the track. There's something called a kinyan dvarim. Like, let's say, for example, I make a statement that I will pay you 1,000 zuz, but I don't do a formal kinyan. That's not a machayev. Meaning, again, a person has to live up to his word on an ethical level, but in terms of dini momenos, you would not be able to sue me in a court of law, in a Jewish court of law, to force me to cough up the 1,000 zuz just because I made a statement. What I need is a kinyan. The purpose of a kinyan is to take us from what I call subjectivity to objectivity. There's got to be some objective action that clinches or demonstrates my gemiras das. In other words, I decided I want to give you the 1,000, but until I do a maisa kinyan, it's just cheap. It's words. Words are cheap. Dvarim is not a kinyan. You need a kinyan action. The only exception to that rule is Hegdesh, and you don't ask me why, but somehow in Hegdesh you can transfer ownership to Hegdesh with Diburi B'Alma, Kibasi Rasul
Hegdesh.
But other than that, there is no such exception to the rule. Every kinyan requires a Maisa kinyan. The Maisa kinyan objectifies his subjective. So once there's Allah of a Maisa kinyan, we can ask the following question. Well, what is the Maisa kinyan of Mashicha? And we said that that's Ozla Machmasa, and therefore in Kalayim, if it's not considered a Maisa Harisha, then in Kinyonim it's not a Maisa Kinyon as far as Rachuv is concerned. We could ask another question. What happens if I do it Shalom Kedarko? And in that case, since I haven't really objectified that action which demonstrates my Gemiras Das, that I want to acquire ownership, then it's not valid. Ein Darkon Shal Pnei Odom Lirchov Be'ir. Rashi adds two words. If you take a look at the last two words on the page, Rashi says Mishum Tzniusa. Now I think the word Tzniusa is not what you and I think it means. It has nothing to do with how much of your body you're covering. I think the word Tzniusa here, and again I have to do a research project throughout Shas, is the opposite of what's called Gaiva. When a person wants to show, you know, I am great, so he rides a horse. Riding a horse is very much an act of gaiva. When you do it in the sada, you have all sorts of reasons, transportation, other functions of a horse out in the sada. And you want to get from place to place. But in the city, people don't ride horses. It's called gaiva. Rashi calls it mishum tzniusa. However, I have here a footnote in which he quotes other mefarshim that it's not a question of anova and snius, but the reason why we don't ride in the city, a horse in the city, is because we will be interfering with and interfered by the holche derech in the city.
It's practical.
Yeah, but it's practical / dangerous, so to speak, if you follow me. You know, that practicality.
So why do you have to do that?
I don't have enough gemina. I'm just telling you that there are two explanations as to why ain darkon shel bnei adam lirkov be'ir.
And why would Rashi want to give a time for ain
darkon? I'll be honest with you. I'm perplexed by this Rashi. I don't know why Rashi feels compelled to introduce the element of anova and tznius. Why not just simply say that this is not appropriate? So I just want to point out that the Mefarshei HaRashi quote a Gemara in Psachim. The Gemara in Psachim, in a totally different context, without mentioning Kinyonim, speaks about a woman riding a horse. And the Gemara says in Psachim on Daf Gimel, She'eino biderech tznius le'isha lirkov al hasus. Now again, I'm not going to tell you, you know whether or not you want to send your wife or your grandmother or your daughter horseback riding, but there is such a Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara speaks about what's called pisuk raglayim. It's, you know, the way you sit on a horse. It's not appropriate for a woman who's tsanua. Could it be that in our day things have changed and maybe it's, you know, since so many women ride horses? I don't know.
It's called side saddle.
Okay, that's pretty challenging. If you know a woman who knows how to side saddle, she probably gets a prize, you know, in the local contest, you know, in the town. Amalei Rav Ashi L'Rav Kahana. Now, this next Gemara is mind-boggling. Rav Kahana was asked a question, the answer to which, in my humble opinion, is absolutely simple. Rav Ashi makes an analogy here that is like from the Arabian Nights. Elameata higbia arniki b'Shabbos. A person lifts up an arniki, a wallet, on Shabbos. What did he violate?
It's muktzah.
Muktzah. He violated the isur muktzah. He says, lo likni, the kinyan should be invalid. Why? She'ein darkon shel bnei adam la'arbia arniki b'Shabbos. Now, both say, what is going on here? You know, if you talk about tznius, you talk about danger and so forth, I understand. You know, the action itself is not appropriate in that context. But muktzah, I mean, okay.
Muktzah is a known concept. Why not?
No, I'm saying muktzah is a question of an avera, but it has nothing to do with darkon shel bnei adam. You know, right. It happens to be one day out of the week I don't lift up an arniki, but six days out of the week I certainly will lift up an arniki.
It's called what's called lo mekubal.
I'm saying it's lo mekubal because of the coincidence of an avera, but not because of the action itself. The action is absolutely appropriate. Every guy on the face of the earth is lifting up an arniki. You're a Jew and you're Orthodox, so you have an isur muktzah, so you're not going to lift up an arniki. Does that make it ain darkon? Does that change the nature of the object? We're dealing with kinyanim now. Now again, there's a long discussion here about a sugya in Tmura. A famous sugya where we pass like a bai against Rava, one of the Al Kagam, and that's called the Ovid Mahani or Ovid Lo Mahani. When you let's say you make a kinyan with a Maisa Vera, does the Torah recognize the kinyan is valid, or do we say that since the Torah is opposed to that Maisa, therefore since you violate a Vera, we undermine the kinyan and it's not valid? So that could be a very interesting sugya unto itself, if I may. If somebody would make a kinyan on the arniki on Shabbos, by what? By lifting it up and violating the isur muktzah, could that also at the same time serve as a kinyan, and the halos kinyan would be valid? Okay, so that we have to learn a sugya tmura. But the question we should ask here is, what does this have to do? What kind of a dimion, you know, of an analogy does he have between riding a horse in the city and lifting up an arniki on Shabbos, lifting up an arniki on Shabbos? But it's not shalom kedarka. Shalom kedarka means that I can give you reasons why a person shouldn't behave this way. You're telling me because it's halach of muktzah, that's why I don't behave this way? You happen to have an overlap, a coincidence of an isur muktzah and agbas arniki. But to say, therefore, it's not a kinyan. You want to quote the halach of Yovid lo mahani, that I can understand.
That explains the Rashi, Mishnah Tziyotah. that, yeah, he can do it, but he...
No, again, it's the Uta, if you go with the Mefarshei Rashi, that just like in the case of an Isha, it's not Sanua, so too it's Gaiva for a man to ride a horse in the city. Okay, so you want to tell me that men don't ride horses in the city, but that's true every day of the week. That's not a Shabbos halacha. That has nothing to do with an overlap of some sort of an Avera. But just because it happens to be on this day, there's an Isha Muktzah by lifting the Arniki, therefore I should undermine the king and say that this is Shalom Kederach B'nei Adam, that's a wild comparison. So the Gemara says, Hachinami Delo Kani, maybe it's not a valid Kenyan. So the Gemara says, Ella, for sure this Kenyan is valid. Why? Because the Hagbah and the Arniki on Shabbos. Why? Because Mighty Ovid, for Kani. Again, you know, he had no right to do this because he was violating an Isa Mukta, but whatever he did, and it's valid. So now the Gemara wants to make the following jump. Let's go back to the case of Rochev Be'ir. And we said that Rochev Be'ir is a kind of a violation of Tznius, or perhaps it's a dangerous action. So the Gemara says, why not apply the principle of Maidi Ovid Ovid Vikani? Once again, we don't understand what the Gemara has in mind here. Maidi Ovid Ovid Vikani is in a case of an Avera, which happens in this case to coincide with the Isur Muktzah on Shabbos, but to say Maidi Ovid Ovid Vikani in a case of something that is Shalo Kedarko, this is an unusual behavior the whole week long, and that's not the way you use a horse. People don't ride horses in the middle of the city. I don't know. I was hoping that Rav Kahana would reject Rav Ashi on a more fundamental basis, but instead he says that you're right, it's Shalom Kedarka, and therefore it shouldn't be a Kenyan. We have to derive from your case of Arniki a new principle that might be Ovid Vikani, that even when you do something that's unusual and that maybe even against the Jewish law, you're still Kona and it's a valid Kenyan. And that has tremendous repercussions. You know, to say that every time a person does something unusual, he would be Kona. You get the impression, by the way, Rabosai, that Rav Kahana is completely rejecting the idea or the principle of She'ein Darkon with regard to Kinyanin, which again is his right. I have no compunctions. I mean, Rav Kahana might say that, forget about Kedarka and Shalom Kedarka. You did the Kinyan and you achieved what you wanted to achieve. I don't have to gauge your kinyan by universal standards of what other people would do. You're a balgaiva, so you want to ride this horse not only in the sada but also in the city. So that's also a valid kinyan. But at the end of the day, what we see is that Rabbi Eliezer in this brisa is validating a kinyan rochuv. Would he validate that kinyan rochuv even in the city, and accepting the principle of Rav Kahana that might be ovid ovid, or only in the sada? But fundamentally, rochuv is a kinyan. How could Shmuel say in an outright, absolute way that rochuv is not a kinyan? Ella, says the Gemara, we're going to have to reinterpret the statement of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was in fact not talking about metzia. He was talking about das machne. The mekach u'memkar askina. Rabbi Eliezer was not talking about a metzia. He was only talking about mekach u'memkar. The omar lei. And why does Rabbi Eliezer have a problem with the city? Again, it can't be because this man is exhibiting gaiva, and most people would not do such a thing, because we're holding now, according to Rav Kahana, the Ovid Vakani, but for an entirely different reason. And what is that reason? That reason is because the Makna made a stipulation. The Omar Le, yeah, we're really pushing a lot into this Bryce of Rabbi Eliezer. Number one, we're saying that Rabbi Eliezer is addressing the case of Mekach u'Memkar. Number two, another Ukimta, not only is it Mekach u'Memkar, but the Mocher said to the Lokeach, or the Makna said to the Kona, Kni, effectuate a kinyan, kiderech b'nei adam, she b'nei adam konim. In other words, I'm going to demand a very high standard for this kinyan to be valid. I want you to do this rechiva in the very same way that most people would do the rechiva. And that is in a sada, but not in the city. So in other words, it comes out like this. That as far as the Gemara at this point is concerned, in a case of a Metziah, or in a case of Mekach u'Memkach, where the Mocher did not make this stipulation, he didn't say, do it, bikonim, kiderech hakonim, kiderech shebnei odom konim, then Rachuv would be a valid kinyan. And not only that, the Gemara's holding would be a valid kinyan even in the city, even though it's Shalom Kedarko, but still Maida Ovid v'konim. So we're left with, at this point, a rejection of Shmuel. Shmuel said that Rachuv is not a valid kinyan. Now we're insisting that Rachuv would be a valid kinyan. The only possible way of reconciling this interpretation of Rabbi Eliezer with Shmuel is to insist that we're not talking about Rachuv at all. We're talking about Manig Baraglov, which is basically Manig. But if he wasn't Manig Baraglov, then Shmuel would be correct and there's no kinyan. On the other hand, there's a distinction here in Rabbi Eliezer between Manig Be'ir and Rachuv Be'ir. And we tried to figure out what the nature of that distinction is. If we accept the principle of Rav Kahana, that Maidi Ovid Ovid V'Kani, then this Braisa is absolutely antithetical to everything that we've been saying. We've been saying that Rachuv is a valid kinyan. Haraya, it operates in the ear. In the ear, we have a problem which Lechora should be resolved by applying the principle of Maidi Ovid Ovid V'Kani. And because we don't know how to resolve that problem, we're going to actually kill two birds with one stone. What do I mean? We're going to solve two problems. Number one, we're going to solve the problem, isn't Rabbi Eliezer excluding or contradicting Shmuel? Because Rabbi Eliezer clearly recognizes the validity of a Kenyan Rachu. And number two, we're going to try to understand how Rabbi Eliezer could introduce a chiluk between the ear and the sada, given the fact that Maidi Ovid Ovid V'Kani. And the answer is that Rabbi Eliezer is not discussing, he's not addressing the case of a Hefker, of a Metziah. He's addressing the case of Mekach u'Memkach. And Shmuel has no problem with Rachuv in a case of Mekach u'Memkach. Again, he might have a problem if he did it in the city because the Machnas said to the Lokeach, I'm selling this to you with a Kenyan Manig, but it should be where? Kiderech Shebnei Odom Konim, which means do the Rechiva and the Manig Baraglov in the fields, but not in the city. And now we can justify that distinction. And at the same time, we can justify the validity of the Kenyan Rachuv here because he's Manig Baraglov. Aye, if he's Rachuv and Manig Baraglov, why couldn't that Kenyan operate even in the city? Because we said that Manig is Kona in the city. And the answer is because we have a principle of a Tanai. A Tanai means that if a Mocher transfers ownership to a Lokeach with a condition, and he wants to upgrade the standards and the validity of the Kenyan that could be used, he has the rights to make such a Tanai. And he could say, Kidkni Kiderech Shebnei Odom Kon. Now here I have...
That in Mekach u'Memkach, it's all based on the understandings between people.
Correct.
Whereas, when you're Zochem and a Hefker, you know, this guy wants it and this guy wants it, you have to do something standardized so that it is actually yours and not his, because he has an equal right to it.
So we're going to say the following, that in the case of Metziah, Rachuv itself, without Manig Baraglov, is not a valid kinyan. We're going to uphold the Shita of Shmuel. On the other hand, if it's Manig Baraglov, then it could be Kona even in the case of Metziah, because that's Manig. However, it would not be valid in the city, and it would not be valid in Mekach u'Memkach. And there are two different reasons for that. The reason it's not valid in the city would be because of Shalom Kedarko. We're not going to be happy with that because of Rav Kahana's principle of Maidi Ovid Ovid V'Kani. Therefore, we're going to introduce a whole new kimta into this price of Rabbi Lozer, and that's going to be Mekach u'Memkach, but we have to add to boot the Tanai that he made, that Kni Kiderech Shebnei Odom Konim. Mm-hmm. Now, I was wondering, I looked in the green book, you know, I call it the Green Monster, and the Olson Farshtam has a long discussion here about what's called a Tanai Kofu. Does it necessitate that the Machnas says to the Kona, if you do an action, Kiderech Shebnei Odom, fine, then you're Kona, but if you don't do it, then you're not Kona. And we derive from B'nai Gad B'nai Ruvain that every Tanai has to be a Tanai Kof.
But in this case, it's only being Uvara Das Machna. And he makes a stipulation.
Excellent.
It's not
making excellent. That's not what it says in the Yotzei Mefarshim, but that's what they mean to say. I'll tell you what they say, but I think the real shot is, and this is what they mean, is what you said. They claim the following, that when do you need a Tanai? A Tanai comes to destroy a Maisa. So for example, if I give you a Kenyan and you implement a valid Kenyan, I can add a Tanai, and the Bittul HaTanai undermines the Maisa. Mm-hmm. However, if the Maisa is not there to begin with, then you don't have to come on to Tanai. All you need is a Gili Das. All he has to say is, this is what I want. So for example, the Gemara has a discussion in Masechet Kiddushin on Esrog. Let's say I say to you, this Esrog is yours. On the first day you can use it, but I want it back. So do you need what's called a Tanai Kofu? And the Gemara says that it seems that you don't need a Tanai Kofu. So Tosa says the reason why you don't need a Tanai Kofu is because of what's called Umdana. Umdana means we know that he doesn't want to forfeit his ability to do the mitzvah. Let's say in a case where he hasn't yet taken the lulav. Again, you can go through all the permutations, but so he gives you the lulav and he says, it's your lulav, but I want it back. So in this case, we have what's called Dvarim Shebelibo Ubelev Kol Adam. Have you heard that phrase? That means anyone in that situation would have said the same thing.
So it's an implicit understanding.
Correct. And that creates an umdana. And an umdana replaces the need for mishpatei atnoim, for all the technicalities of a clause or a condition. Today, for example, you pay a lawyer good money to make up a contract with conditions in it, because every country and every city and every municipality has its own rules about how to formulate a condition. And the Torah has four regulations about how to form a condition. All those rules, mishpatei atnoim, are necessary in order to break up a maisa kinyan. Now, it's a maisa kinyan per se, in and of itself, was perfect. But lo yitzur, there was something in the maisa kinyan itself. That's where David comes to the fore. Again, in the green book, you won't see it. But I think that's what they mean. And I believe that's what Tosis means when he says umdana. That if I give you a kinyan because of a certain reason, and it's clear why I enter into this kinyan, then I don't even have to form a condition. It's just, this is the das makta. The das makta is, if X, then I have das makta. If you return this esrog, then I'm makta to you with a lev sholem, with what's called a gemiras das. Or, for example, a man is making aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. And he says, I'm making a, what is it called, a flea market? What do they call it when they sell everything,
A garage sale.
Garage sale. So he makes a garage sale, and guess what? His plans fell through. Huh? And he can't go on Aliyah. So I don't know what happened.
Everybody that bought at the garage sale on the tonight that he was making Aliyah.
Correct. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth in Masechet Kiddushin, whether that's called Belibo Ubelev Kol Adam. Is it enough that he sold his property because he was planning to move, to relocate, or is it that's not enough? He has to make a tanai with all of mishpatei atnoim. So there's our luck again that if we know what motivated the sale, and it would be believe, other he doesn't need a tanai kofel, he doesn't need mishpatei atnoim. So for example, there's something in mishpatei atnoim called heinu kodem lalav, which means that I would have to say to you, I'm giving you this esrog, and it's yours, but if you don't return it, then it's not yours. That's called hein kodem lalav. What would be if I said to you, I'm not giving you this esrog unless you return it, and if you return it, it's yours. That's lav kodem lahein. So the Rishonim want to say that in the case of an esrog, even lav kodem lahein would be valid this. Because again, it's something that's very clear and very much understood.
Another thing is that the DBC and the Koros for is like some sort of future event that may or may not take place. So it's hard to say what the Das Matn is, and therefore you have to make a condition if this, then if not that. It's just that, and it's right. B'nai Ruvain is a classic case of that. that's a future event which we don't know will take place or not. So we cannot say that.
So that's already another sugya called Brera. You know, I don't want to get into Brera because that's really blow us out of the wood.
But in basically, in this case, it's clear. I want you to buy it for me this way, and not the other way.
Right. Now, on a psychological level, I don't really understand why he would make such a condition. Meaning, it seems that he does want to sell the horse, and he's getting full price for the horse. But he says, no, I don't want you to do a rechiva in the city because that's not Kederach Shebnei Adam Konen. I don't know what motivates him to set that up. You know, is he thinking that maybe he wants out of this deal or what?
No, because the guy could get on the horse and ride it and then say, oh no, this is just a test drive.
I'm not actually
Kones or
maybe I don't know, but again, look at the language of the Gemara. The Gemara says Kni Kederach Shebnei Adam Konen. It sounds like he's really very meticulous. You know, I call it a Yeki kind of mentality. You know, I want you to do it the way most people would do it. You know, it's got to be very fine. You know, you have to wear your tie. You know, and wear your suit. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what he means by that. Why would the Machna stipulate that the kinyan has to be done Kederach Shebnei Adam Konen? Now, possibly, Yosef, I'm not sure if this is what you had in mind, but maybe you could say the following, that when I sell you something, I'm going to take the money that you give me and I'm going to invest it, or whatever I'll do with it. The last thing I want is for you to come forward and invalidate this kinyan. So I don't want to leave any leaf
unturned.
Yeah, anything unturned. I want to make sure and guarantee that no one's going to come along and contest this kinyan.
Right.
I want to be able to sleep quietly and calmly at night. And again, whether or not the mocher is halachically correct or not, but he thinks that in order to guarantee himself that the kinyan will be A++, and no one will come forward and contest the kinyan, he adds this stipulation, Kederach Shebnei Adam Konen, because he knows that if the kinyan is going to be implemented in the classic way that anyone would acquire ownership through that kinyan, then he knows there's no one who can blow that kinyan out of the wood. Now the Gemara wants to suggest that perhaps rechiva in the city would be a valid kinyan. It would be considered, even if the bocher said Kederach Shebnei Adam Konen, it would be a valid, again, rechuv in the city. Says the Gemara, there's a difference between Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYochim. And the Gemara says that E Rishus HaRabim Koni. Yeah. This is a little bit of a surprise to us because we thought that the more people that there are, the more hesitation or inhibition there would be to drive a horse in the city in front of the masses of people. So Rashi is bothered by this, and Rashi says the following. Why is Rechiva considered Kedarka in Rishus HaRabim? So Rashi says, because his other option is manhig, which means for him to stand on the street level, so to speak, and lead the animal, or push the animal, or cause the animal to move. And he says that in Rishus HaRabim, you might not be able to successfully implement manhig. People are afraid when you're riding on the horse. They see you riding on the horse, and all of a sudden they clear the way. You know, like, clear the way. He's riding on his horse. They make a way for him. But in a case of Rishus HaRabim, where he is manhig, says Rashi, that Lo lahanig, it's not derech lahanig, pen yifsiku ovre drachim beino levein behemto. Which I think means that in every case of manhig, we assume there's a certain distance, it might not be a large distance, a wide distance, but there's some distance between the person and the animal. There's a merchak between them, in which case he is calling the animal, or he is leading the animal, he's holding the reins of the animal, whatever he's doing to get the animal to move. And in such a case, somebody might go by and he'll lose control of the animal. So that's not considered kedarka. But if he's riding on his horse, then that's the way to guarantee that he can get from one place to the other. He won't be disturbed by what Rashi calls the overage roch. The iyanam chashiv hu, if on the other hand he has a different standard, an ethical standard of behavior, he is one of the sarim, you know, that serve on the cabinet of the country, and it's not considered a derech gaiva if he would to ride a horse in the city. The chashuvim ride a horse in the city is cunning. Then even though the mocher stipulated it has to be kederech b'nei adam, it means kederech b'nei adam for this individual, given his station in life. And if for this subject, it would be a kavod for him to ride a horse in the city, and it would be a p'chisas hakavod for him to stand on the street, on street level, and start beating up the animal in order to get the animal to move, then for him, because he's such an adam chashuv, that's considered kedarko, kederach shebnei adam konim. And this, of course, reminds us of the very famous sugya in Kiddushin about an adam chashuv. And the Gemara says that although you have to give a woman at least a shavah pruta in order to be makadishar, in the case of an adam chashuv, you don't necessarily need a shavah pruta. All you need is that she gets benefit from the fact that he gives her a gift, or alternatively, she gets benefit from the fact that she receives a gift from such an adam chashuv. Ve'i ishahi kanya. Now this is strange, because we quoted earlier in the name of the Mefarshim that the Gemara in Pesachim establishes that for a woman it is improper behavior and it's an undermined sneeze for her to ride a horse. Now we're saying the dafka woman, as opposed to a man, can ride a horse in Rishus HaRabim, in the public eye, and that's considered for her kederech shebnei adam konim, and we fulfill the requirement of the makna, of the mocher. So the answer to this, I believe, is the fact that the alternative for her is even less kedarka. In other words, here we have a relativity theory. She has two options in order to make an acquisition over this animal in Rishus HaRabim. She can either be manig biyadayim, in other words, she should actively try to move the animal, get the animal to move. And the other option is to ride the animal. And believe it or not, it's a lot easier for her to ride the animal than to lead the animal, because to lead the animal requires a certain strength. Again, I'm not talking about a case where you beat up the animal with a stick, but I'm talking about a case where you literally pull the reins of the animal to control the animal. Yeah. And that requires a great deal of physical prowess and energy and effort, which she's not capable of. What she is capable of is riding the animal. So for her, and that's it. So we have three chidushim so far. The first chidush was that in the case of manhig in Rishus HaRabim, he's afraid that he'll be disturbed because of the distance, and therefore the more normal way of getting the animal to move would be rochel. The second chidush was that the concept of kederach shebnei adam konim is relative, and the third chidush is that in order to determine whether or not it's kedarka, we have to compare it to the other option. In a situation where she has no other option, she wants desperately to make a kinyan on this animal, we're going to overlook the fact that it's not so tzniyistic for her piece of gregalim to ride the animal, because her other option to be acquire ownership would be even worse, would be manig. She doesn't have the physical strength to be manig. So he has in the quote here a Rashba. The Rashba has a different girsa. The Rashba doesn't have the girsa he isha he kanya, because the Rashba is convinced that a woman would not ride in Rishus HaRabim, meaning if it's a gaiva for a man to ride, how much more so for a woman. But instead his girsa is the isha chashuva he kanya. So that even an isha could have this category and advantage of being an isha chashuva, And for her, if let's say she's one of the officers of the king's court, that's the way she rides through the street by sitting on the saddle and riding the animal. And finally, we have the fourth category, ve'i inish zilahu kani, which means if someone is not makpin on their kavod, they don't care about snius, they don't care about what people might say about them, and look, who are you, and how could you be riding a horse in the city, and we don't allow this. They are completely indifferent to what people will say about them. And kavod is a reflection of one's self-respect. In this case, since he doesn't have self-respect, therefore, it's for him, it's okay. He doesn't feel any inhibitions about riding a horse publicly in front of all the people. And he's not humiliated by that, because he's not humiliated by anything. He's in his zila. He's someone who is zila, means he's not mechubad. And once again, this is indicative of the significance of a person's kavod, that whether or not he would ride a horse, and whether or not that's considered kederach shekodim, shebnei adam kodim, really is a reflection of his level of kavod. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll stop. We'll stop.